Welcome back to the Pack-A-Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. My name is Andy Herman. Thanks, as always, for being here. Reminder that we've got the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis coming up next from 9 to 11, right here on the Fan. And if you like bacon, beer, and bands, you will love Bacon Fest. Enter to win VIBE tickets, very important bacon eater, to Bacon Fest June 6th through June 8th at Walworth County Fairgrounds. Go to thefanmilwaukee.com to enter and for your chance to win. Right now, we're going to be joined by the one and only Wendell Ferreira, A to Z Sports, an absolute stud in the Packer sphere and a rising star. You can find him on social media at WendellFP. Wendell, it is wonderful to be talking to you once again. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Andy, how are you doing, man? It's always a pleasure to be here talking about with you. It's an amazing opportunity for me, too. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It is always a pleasure as well on my end, and I'm really excited to dig into a variety of different topics with you. And I want to start with some of these potential rule changes that are being discussed this week. And we broke Tommy yesterday, our producer here, when we talked about this. So I'm going to get your opinion, and I'm really hoping that you're on my side and not Tommy's, but I won't lead you one way or the other. Playoff seeding proposal as to whether or not the NFL should go with just the top seven teams or whether or not the division winners should still get a bye in the opening rounds. This sounds like it's going to be voted on tomorrow. What should we know about this, and what do you think the NFL should do in this situation?
Yeah, I think the new proposal is positive for the NFL because the divisional winners would still have a playoff spot secured. And I think that's enough. The reasonable argument for the other side is probably that the teams have schedules in a regular season based in their divisions. So maybe a team that has a tougher division would have a tougher schedule, and therefore, even with a lower, with a worse record, should be the better seed. But the actuality is that we haven't seen that in the NFL. Last season, for example, the NFC North was tougher, and still, the better teams were getting better records. So I think it kind of explains why the new proposal was smart. So I'm on your side on this one. I think the playoff seeding proposal is a good one. But I think it has to happen early in the wild card round, because there was another proposal that hadn't passed about maybe reseeding just for the divisional round. No, I think it has to happen as early as the wild card round.
Yeah, I hated that proposal where it was going to be keep everything status quo and then reseed in the divisional round. That was some sort of bizarro half measure that I think was terrible for everyone. I do like this. I do think it also makes things matter a little bit more, and especially if we do end up with an 18-game season or 18-game schedule, I do think it's going to be even more important that those games in week 17 and 18 are important for everyone. And some team that just has the division locked up and a number three or four spot locked up but can't move up to the one or two or down to the five, six, or seven, I think it just is going to make it matter so much more that all of these seeds are in play, and it's going to be important for everyone to continue to win at that point. So now I think there's a lot of positive support for it. We'll see tomorrow if that does in fact pass or not. Of course, the other one, which the Packers have been heavily involved with for better or worse, probably worse, is the tush push proposal and trying to eliminate that. So what are your thoughts on whether or not this could pass or not, and whether or not it should pass or not?
Yeah, currently I think this one has a higher chance of passing, but this is the one where I disagree. I disagree with the Packers, especially because they had to revise the proposal, because initially it was to ban the tush push specifically, and that was clearly towards the Eagles, right? So now they're changing it to ban any pulling of the ball carrier anywhere on the field. And I think this is a problem because, for example, if the ball carrier goes through the offensive line and, let's say, a guard pulls and pushes him, pushes the ball carrier, that's a penalty too. And I think that's just too much. I think that's part of football. And we don't have evidence so far that this type of play has a higher injury rate than a normal play. So if we come to a conclusion that this is not a safe play, I would understand that. But we don't have those numbers yet. So I'm certainly against that, and I think it's they just want to ban a play that, you know, it's successful for the Eagles, but because they executed well, any team can do that too. And if they don't execute as well, it's a problem of the team, right? So if you don't have a higher injury risk in this on this play, I don't see the reason to ban it. I don't actually think it makes a lot of sense.
I'm with you. I guess my big thing is I just don't know that I care all that much one way or the other. Just decide what you're going to do and just do it. And let's get this entire conversation over with. I wish the Packers would have gone even more in spite. And when they changed the rule, just said they are banning the tush push only for the Eagles. That would have been the best way to go about it, since they're already getting a bunch of crap for it, that they can't stop the play. So that they're proposing it. Just say like only the Eagles can't do it. That would have been amazing. But no, in all seriousness, I just want this to be done with one way or the other. And I hate that the Packers name is attached to it either way, but here we are, and we'll find out sooner rather than later if they do change that rule or not. What about this interesting onside kick proposal that they would move the kicking team up 1 yard so that there would potentially be a better opportunity for more onside kick recoveries? I don't know how I feel about this one. How about you?
Yeah, we haven't had much time to think about that as much, but I don't understand why the NFL wants it to have a higher chance of success, because, you know, the team that's ahead in the score, it deserves to be ahead. And the onside kick is supposed to be hard, because at the same time that you want it to be competitive to the end, you don't want it to be an unfair game, right? You want for your team to have a better chance if they're playing well. The ultimate goal of the game is for the better team to win. So I think when you create these variables, I think it maybe changes too much the nature of the game. I understand why the onside kick is an important tool for teams, but at the same time, I think it's just maybe too much, giving too many incentives for the losing team, for the team that's below, to try to overcome the odds. So I think it's a little bit risky.
For me, the Mendoza line is right around 10%. If it goes up anywhere above 10%, where it's easy enough or better than 10% chance of recovering it, that's too high of a chance. Like, it should be 10% or less. Like, at the same token, I don't hate that there's like, if there's a little bit of drama at the end of like, there's a 1 in 10 chance that they could get the ball back. It creates a little bit of that. Oh, could they, whether you're on the losing side or winning side, whatever it is, there's a little bit more of that drama. And if they do get it, it's not necessarily to say that the game is over because they recover it either. You still have to usually go down and still score points after that. But I think anything above 10 is just too much. And again, I think you're incentivizing the worst team, just giving them more opportunity to win the game, which I do not think is ideal. I think right now where it's at around 6% is maybe a little bit too low, but if they can get it closer to 10, but not over it, I'm fine with it. But I don't think we should be incentivizing, the team that's losing the game more often than not.
And I don't think 1 yard would necessarily change everything, right? It's just a small change. I think it's May. We don't have much to talk about, so it's more important than probably to see. But it's a small difference, after all.
We're talking to Wendell Ferreira, A to Z Sports. You can find him on social media at WendellFP. All right, Wendell, let's kind of change directions here and get off some of the rule changes. What was your initial reaction to the Packers' schedule, some of the key takeaways from that?
Yeah, for the most part, we had already known the opponents and the most important things. But there are some considerations, I think, about the Packers' schedule that are notable still. And I think the most important one for me, it's kind of a duel. It's the early bye and 2 short weeks, because the Packers will play on Thursday twice in the season. And when we had those leaks early, I thought maybe the Packers would have a bye week before the second Thursday game, because by doing that, the NFL wouldn't allow 2 short weeks. And I think that's probably an issue. And the early bye week specifically in week 5 is a big issue, because if the Packers go to the playoffs, they could have an extreme scenario where they play 13 consecutive weeks to finish out the regular season, and then let's say they go to the playoffs and play 4 more games, that would be 17 consecutive weeks of football. So that's tough. I think that's the biggest problem for the Packers. And the only other notable thing, I guess, is probably playing against the Eagles in week 10 after the Eagles have a bye. So they will have that matchup disadvantage against the Eagles. It's a big game, and it's probably a bigger issue for the Packers here. But overall, it's more or less what we have predicted for some time. A heavy road schedule, because the Packers play the first 2 games at Lambeau, and then they have this year 9 road games because the conference. The entire NF2 have nine road games this year. Playing two home games early is good because the Packers haven't had this disadvantage for a long time, but at the same time, it might be costly down the road.
Yeah, I think so too. And those late road games, three of the last four of the last six, five of the last eight on the road, especially the three of the last four, if you don't end up winning your division, have to go on the road for the playoff games following that, you could end up in a scenario where you've got to go on the road three games in the playoffs in order to get to the Super Bowl. That would be six of your final seven games on the road in that situation. So if there's ever a season to get that home game and win the division, this is probably the one, because otherwise there's going to be a ton of travel to end the season. Let's talk a little bit about this Trey Hendrickson situation. Matt Bowen of ESPN recently put together an article of saying like what players he would like to see end up in which places, and wrote about Trey Hendrickson being a match for the Packers. A, do you agree? And B, is there any small remote chance that you could see this happening?
Probably no for both questions. I think the Packers, if you start looking at what they do and what they like, even in free agency, the Packers tend to sign players going into their second contract. For example, Aaron Banks is a 26-year-old player going into his second NFL contract. Last year, they signed McKinney and Jacobs. Jacobs technically was the second contract too, even though he had the short-term deal. So the Packers tend to like to pay players that are reaching their primes, you know. And Trey Hendrickson is already a 30-year-old player. So, yeah, he is a great player now, right now. And I think he might have maybe one, two, or 3 years of production. But the Packers will probably be paying elite money for a player that will be past his prime. So I think that's something the Packers generally don't do. And I can't blame them because it's hard to pay players based on name. I understand why the Packers would make a move like that, especially if the trade compensation is not as high. But I think if the Bengals are not willing to pay him, we know that the Bengals are kind of a cheapy franchise, but at the same time, it's reasonable to avoid paying a player entering his 30s, something like maybe $35 million a year. It's a huge amount of money. And the Packers, they don't have a comfortable cap situation moving forward. The Packers have some high-paid players, and the cap situation for next year is kind of concerning to a certain degree. They have some big players to extend, like Zach Tom. So I think, first of all, Hendrickson wouldn't fit their preferred profile in terms of age and athleticism, even though he's a productive player. Players that are not overly athletic, they tend to regress. So I think that's another factor of risk for the Packers there. I just don't see the Packers doing it. And after last season, Gutekunst said it's really hard to trade for veteran players because it's not just the draft capital, it's not just the salary, it's both. You're giving up a player with controlled cost for 4 years, and you're giving up cap space too, both at the same time. So I understand why the Packers wouldn't do that. It has to be a real difference maker. And probably a younger player. You know, I would understand the Packers trading for a guy who's 25, 26-year-old, reaching his prime. I just don't see that happening with a player as old as Hendrickson.
Yeah, if you look at it, you know, just based on what happened this offseason, let's say this trade happened prior to the draft and prior to the start of free agency, you know, you're probably looking at about a second-round pick in a major contract, right? That's Anthony Belton and Aaron Banks is what you did. You basically would have been kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, where, yeah, your defensive end group probably looks a little bit better. And then maybe they don't take Sorrell and Oliver in the fourth and fifth, and maybe they take offensive linemen in the fourth and fifth to kind of make up for that. But now maybe your defensive line is stronger with Hendrickson, but with an older player. But now you don't have Sorrell and Oliver on that line. And now you've got no Belton, no Banks. And now you've got to spend fourth and fifth round picks on offensive linemen to try to replace that. And the offensive line's going to look a lot worse. So you just end up again. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. And that end creates a domino effect because if the Packers don't have, let's say, Belton, and they will need maybe to keep Rashid Walker next year, so that's another high contract that you have to pay. So that's a domino effect of paying high-end players.
and potentially Sean Ryan as well, right? So, like, yes, there's a lot of layers that goes into this and trying to figure out how to put a roster together. And just when you think, like, you're just taking out one small domino to get a Trey Hendrickson, that one small domino can lead to a lot of other changes that can really be non-beneficial for your team. I'm with you. I love Trey Hendrickson. I think the idea of him on the Packers is really, really fun. I think there's a 0.000001% chance that it actually happens. If I'm wrong, it'll be fun, but there's definitely going to be some consequences that come along with it. All right, before we get you out of here, just really quick, what are your thoughts on this Elgton Jenkins situation, and how can Green Bay kind of make something work with Elgton moving forward that's maybe a compromise for both sides?
Yeah, it's hard because Elgton Jenkins is also getting a little bit older, and he's moving to a position that is less valuable than the one he was playing before, because on the market, center is less valuable than guard. So I think the Packers, with 2 years left on his contract, I don't think they should do an extension. But maybe there might be a compromise there to maybe guarantee this year's salary, or maybe convert some of his base salary next year into a roster bonus, let's say in early March. Because by doing that, Jenkins would have some type of guarantee that if I'm not playing for the Packers next year, at least I'll reach the market early and have a chance to sign another contract with another team. I think that's probably the most likely scenario after all. The Packers have to do probably something to appease him to some degree, but I don't see the Packers extending him now, especially because the Packers are already paying Aaron Banks, and they will have to pay Zach Tom. Maybe they will have to pay Walker or Ryan if Jordan Morgan or Belton don't play at a high level. So the Packers are already investing a lot in the offensive line, so I don't see the Packers paying Jenkins a lot. If he plays well this year, maybe next year with only a year left on his contract, I can see a short-term extension, something like the Bears did with Joe Tooney now. But at the same time, I don't see a big extension with 2 years left, especially because it creates a bad precedent, right? If a player with 2 years left in his deal tries to get something and the Packers give up, I think it's probably setting a bad precedent for future negotiations, and this is probably something the Packers don't want to do.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I wonder if they can just figure out maybe throwing some incentives in his current deal that would maybe get him a little bit more money, just to kind of compromise somewhere and just be like, hey, if you hit these incentives, we're going to be happy anyway, because it means you had a great season. Gives Jenkins a little bit more to potentially play for and earn this season. And also knowing that if he plays really great this year, whether it's with Green Bay or somebody else, he's still going to be in line for a big contract next offseason. So I think there's maybe a way to work it around, but it's still going to be very interesting to see how that kind of plays out. All right, Wendell, I cannot thank you enough. Awesome stuff as always. Where can we find all of your incredible work, and what do you got cooking on A to Z Sports this week?
Yeah, I have. You can find me at A to Z Sports, as you said. Also on Twitter, Wendell FP. And this time we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Today I wrote a piece comparing Jordan Love's extension with Brock Purdy's extension, and what the Packers got right, what they got wrong. I think that's an interesting read for your fans, because I know you are a salary cap nerd too, and probably yep. The people that follow you are also interested in this kind of topic, so I think it'll be interesting for those to read that one.
Yeah, looking forward to reading that article. Is it out now, or is it coming out this week?
It's already out.
Awesome. I'm going to go check that out as soon as I possibly can. Everyone should do the same. If you're not checking out Wendell over on A to Z Sports, his specific Packers coverage over there is phenomenal. It's definitely worth your read every single time. So make sure you're checking that out. Follow him again on social media at WendellFP. Wendell, great talking to you. We'll do it again soon. All right, my friend?
Appreciate you, my friend.
All right, right back at you. Again, Wendell Ferreira at WendellFP on social media. We're going to be right back right after this, going over... lead off show, a couple other things. It's going to be exciting. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.